Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, give us 4 stars. I am inclined to think that you are a hater. Thursdays when we bring a guest in, joining us is my man, the best college football writer in America. His name is Spencer Hall. Spencer, I have to tell you this. I was talking to a friend the other day, and she was telling me that while, you know, she enjoys us talking about like college football and stuff, she would much rather hear us just kind of talk about maybe other stuff or any other thing, perhaps. And we have been talking the last few days about Mike Judge's tales from the tour bus. I feel like we should share some with the world.
You know, you can talk about season one's all about country. And if you haven't seen it, I'd watch it, especially because George Jones was a wild one. And you should watch. Like, I will tell you, I will ruin this whole show if you let me. I'll just tell 30 minutes of George Jones stories. But that's not what we're here for. We're here for season two, which was about funk.
And I've just been like going through it, right? Like I haven't done the whole thing of it, but every single thing that I've seen has been amazing. And you just directed me to one about the time that James Brown took acid. And I'm just trying to imagine James Brown on acid.
Well, it's Bootsy, right?
Yes.
It's Bootsy Collins. When, if you don't know, in one of the weirdest mismatches ever, Bootsy Collins, the bassist for P-Funk and the guy who was on Grooves in the Heart by D-Light, he played for James Brown. Which is kind of like when I tell you, you know, Jimi Hendrix was in the army, right? You know, people end up, you know, Rip Torn, if you don't know the actor, Rip Torn was like, is a legendary Aggie cadet family, right?
Really?
Like he's from like a big Texas A&M guy. So please imagine Rip Torn in like Aggie stuff, right? Like in the cadet gear. It's not, you know, the guy from Men in Black, the guy who once hit Norman Mailer with a hammer, that's the guy that I'm talking about, who was once a member, I believe, of the Corps of Cadets. So people end up in weird places. Bootsy was playing bass for James Brown, and he and the boys would sometimes pre-show because they didn't care. They just did not care. They would take, you know, they were like 19 years old and they never had money. Like part of the documentary is James Brown finds them and they don't care because they've never had money. So they would say, he'd say, James would be like, that'd be $50. And he's like, just take it. Take it all, James. I don't care. I don't even know what money means, right? So they're all splitting. They would take, you know, acid. They'd put the drug in water and they would dissolve it, or a drink, right? Like some like orange Fanta or whatever. And they're all just drinking it before.
Like acid lean. Acid lean.
Basically, yeah. They're just doing acid lean. And they're splitting it in the alley behind the place where they're going to play, and James comes out, and he, according to Bootsy, literally says, like, hit me! You know, when James Brown says that, you give James Brown the drink because, you know, they don't care, but they also know they're not going to refuse James. And Bootsy, for a second, it's like the best moment of the documentary, he goes, am I actually going to give James Brown LSD? So I gave James Brown LSD, right? There was no question. He asked it, but he was going to do it all along. And then James goes out on stage and kind of loses his mind for the better part of several hours. And after that, shortly after that, the tenure of Bootsy Collins and James Brown's band, along with his brother Catfish, it ends. It ends spectacularly. I encourage you to watch the entire thing.
Well, first of all, do you realize how, like, even beyond the don't care part, even if you don't care, you don't want to lose your job. Do you realize how good you have to be to believe, you know what, I can take acid and then go play for James Brown? Because it's not like James Brown was fining you for egregious errors. James Brown is fining you for anything.
Oh, he's fining you if he's in a bad mood. That seems to be the gig. Remember also, they got this gig because they were a good James Brown cover band, and because his previous band had decided that they wanted more money. And the minute, these are guys, like, these are legends, right? We're talking like Maceo Parker. And when they asked for more money, James Brown sent an airplane to get another band that same day. That's what he did. And then he played a show. This is also to say James Brown was totally sober at this point. So before he ever got involved with any kind of illicit drug use, he was insane. And then later on, in like midlife, he decided to add some drugs to it.
You know, James Brown, first of all, his belief is, I can ride any band into greatness. I will browbeat them and harass them into greatness. And by the way, there is a significant reason to believe this is the truth.
Yeah, no, there's absolutely no reason to not believe that. Also, by the way, this entire time, if you watch like the tales, right, they're all tied together. So these guys all end up kind of overlapping, right? Like George Clinton is in there, and P-Funk, these guys come out of James Brown's band, they form another band, and then they're introduced to George Clinton. And that just happened, right? This is like, oh, so, you know, Van Gogh and Gauguin roomed together.
Yeah, what a break.
Yeah, that just happened, right? I adore the entire thing. I like both seasons one and two. Season two is by far the funnier. It involves less firearms, right? Like, that's the other thing, is I went back and I watched. You go, oh, man, the funk scene was pretty crazy. Then you go back and watch the country music ones and go, oh, these are actual felonies.
Yeah.
Like, there's just kind of dangerous things that happen in funk. In country music, the Billy Joe Shaver one, he shoots a dude in the head.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I think the thing people forget, if you watch the news and see the people that are most about them guns, what kind of music you think they listen to?
They're listening to Waylon Jennings.
Yes. Like that's what they are. I'm just talking about the face of We Want Guns in America. What concerts you think they're going to? It ain't NWA, baby.
No, it's Billy Joe Shaver, who had a song written about him called Where Do You Want It? Because that was, at the time, what everybody thought Billy Joe said before he shot this guy in the face. By the way, dude lived.
Oh.
Most country music thing ever is that the dude lived, and you have to go through a trial in Texas, right? Where, at one point, and this is my, I swear, I'll stop here. The greatest Billy Joe Shaver story is he's on the stand, and his defense attorney is cross-exing him, which Willie Nelson told him not to do, by the way. He said, well, you're not going to cross-ex him, right? And he goes, well, no, I have to, Willie. Willie's like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. So he gets him up on the stand, and he says, so did you know you could have walked away from this fight, right? Trying to establish that maybe Billy Joe would acknowledge that he could have and set up a legal argument later. Instead, Billy Joe Shaver says, I'm from Texas. I wasn't walking away from the fight. And the lawyer's like, oh, God, he's going to jail. He's going to jail. I can't do anything about this. Oh, God.
Man, you know, somebody needs to do this for sports, right? Right. Like someone. And the problem is no one would tell the truth that musicians tell about what goes on, because like the ecosystem around all these things always just have these people around. Right. And you have these people around. And then you on top of that have folks that have been incredibly coddled in a way that leads them to believe that they can really do whatever they want. Therefore, they actually do such things. Like if we could have a Tales from the NBA. Like, it is just amazing, the human ecosystem and everything that we would get out of that.
Oh, I want, you know, all I want is I want Tales from the NBA 1995 to 2005. And here's the thing. You got to wait like 20 years. You got to wait till somebody's dead. Right. Like that helps. A lot of these are about like, you know, some of these are about Rick James. OK, Rick James is dead. Everybody's just going to talk about Rick James. Right. And, you know, some of these country dudes are dead. George Jones is dead. Okay, cool. We can tell all the George Jones stories now. All of them, right? That's the problem. You got to wait. So I'm just going to put a little bookmark on this, and we're going to come back to it in like 15 years.
Yeah, athletes live longer. You're right.
That's the other thing. Athletes do tend to live longer because they're literally physically fit for a living.
Yeah. Somebody is writing a book, by the way, is putting a book out about the Jailblazers. And I have to buy it, right?
Oh, I need the audiobook. I need the animated Tales from the Tour Bus style breakdown of the Jailblazers.
Yes.
I need it all.
Like, not only do I need to buy that book, I feel like, Gabe, I need to buy it, read it, and then we need to book the writer, because I just can't imagine how that book can't be amazing.
All in Portland. That's the best part, because all of those guys end up in Portland, Oregon.
Yes. We are the black population.
They end up in a place too where they go, well, they're different, but they are weird. Where do we overlap? Where's the commonality?
Like all of these, you have to remember, the state of Oregon was founded with one little law that I don't know if everybody knows about. You know what that law was? No black people allowed. No slavery, just to be clear. But no black people allowed. Like that was the law in the founding of Portland. And it was the cast of characters that they brought through. It's not just like it was just an NBA team, right? They'd had that. You know, they had Maurice Lucas and they had Clyde Drexler, they had Terry Porter, Jerome Kersey, Buck Williams, you know. It ain't like they never had black people show up to play there before. They ain't have those dudes, though.
Think about this. Where did Zach Randolph go to really get his head straight?
Memphis.
Where did he really go to become the mayor, the upstanding citizen? Where did he go to become a beloved member of the community? That Portland could never be for him because Portland was just too, because that environment around the Trailblazers was just too distracting.
Yes.
Just one word for it. He went to Memphis.
Yes.
That's where he went.
Although I would like to note, if the Zach Randolph that Portland got had shown up in Memphis, I don't know how long his career is. Right, like luckily he had a chance to go learn some things before he got there. Because the best
what I'm saying is that Memphis is a fun town.
Yes.
It is an extremely fun town. It's not the kind of fun that I think helps you focus and prolong a professional athlete's career.
No, but
in a lot of cases.
Zach Randolph's around Memphis going to people's houses shooting dice on the porch after games. I had somebody tell me that's how and they love him. They love him.
I would too. What if I'm sitting there playing my particular game of chance on my porch, right? And Zach Randolph comes up and he's like, "Hey man, can I hang?" Of course you can. Have a seat, Debo. Can I get you a beverage? Do you need a snack? Right? I'm not asking how long he's there either, man. You know, like at some point, people who are larger than life are just kind of bears, right? They roam up. You're a little cautious. You wait for them to do whatever they're going to do and acquiesce, and then you let them go because you don't want to mess with them, right? That's the same thing with musicians, right? Whenever anyone in any of these shows that we're talking about shows up, everyone's just kind of watching and waiting, right? Because they're on a different level. They've been freed from society's constraints in their mind to just do whatever they want. So, for instance, when Waylon Jennings comes over and he empties his pockets and he puts 3 knives, 2 pistols, and, you know, a quarter of cocaine on the table, you just go, "Well, Waylon's over."
Yes.
I just got to roll with this because he's Waylon Jennings. Same thing if Zach Randolph shows up on my porch. I'm like, "Oh, come on in, man."
We need to, if we could get tales from the NBA, just the tales from Zach Randolph, I think would be pretty incredible. The tales from the NBA redux of the time that the Wizards brought guns to work.
It's in the locker room.
If I
could just find out, I have one NBA question. One. Okay, if you go back to the original Trailblazers championship team's parade, there is video of Bill Walton, who I do not know what state Bill Walton is in. Okay, he's probably been awake for a long time. He's probably really excited that they just won a championship. He's very young, and he looks out at the crowd, and it's just this adoring crowd of Portlanders, just ready to go, ready to, you know, cheer anything he says. And Bill Walton looks out and goes, "Hey, does anyone know where my bike is?" There's video. You can go look this up. Okay. He's like, "I'm real excited and everything, but I love my bike. If you guys could help me find my bike, I want to know who's got Bill Walton's bike from like the 70s Portland championship Trailblazers team. Somebody's got Bill Walton's bike, man, and I want to help him find it.
I also want to know like how big that bike is and what person could actually ride. Like if it's made for Bill Walton, it's not made for you.
No. Somebody stole that and then realized they made an immense mistake, right?
Yes. As they stood aside the bike and walked it 5 miles home. Right? Like they just thought that they were going to be able to scoop that thing up and then keep it moving. Nah, they actually had to walk the thing down the street. Now let's think about this. What if we can get tales from the recruiting trail? Like can we get a cartoon mock-up of Cam Newton's daddy in that hotel room with Dan Mullen, where Cam Newton's daddy starts laying out prices, and Dan Mullen is like, "Oh, no, sirree, Bob."
or this. I want the recruiting story of Tim Tebow, because what I want is Urban Meyer like jetting out of there, right? Like Dan Mullen at Urban Meyer jetting out of his place while Mike Shula sleeps in his car. Because remember. That was it. That Mike Shula showed up, told Tim Tebow he loved him. And Tim Tebow's like, "Hey, man, I love you too, but I'm not coming to Alabama. I'm real sorry about this." I've talked with Jesus. I've talked with Dad, in that order, and I'm not coming. So they just kind of like peel out of the place while Mike Shula kind of hangs around in his car outside, just knowing his career's over.
The thing that's funny is that if Mike Shula had gotten Tim Tebow, do you think Nick Saban would have let Tim Tebow on the field? Because for the offense that Nick Saban was trying to run in that day and age, Tim Tebow didn't fit at all.
I think he did. Good H-back. Good fullback. just would have, like, with what Saban was running there, right? He would have, he totally would have had him on the field for at least 10, 15 goal line snaps a game. That's what Tim Tebow would have been doing there. Yeah, it was like, you look back and go, a lot of these, the kid made the right choice, right? Like, Cecil Newton never lied about anything.
No.
Ever. He's not, not a thing. Played everything absolutely right vis-a-vis camp. Absolutely. And if you went back and go, hey, was it worth it? Was all of that worth it for Auburn? The answer is 100 times yes.
Oh, God, yes. They do. Like, how much, if you told Auburn how it would go, we are going to give you a guy that's going to produce what might be the greatest college football season ever, and it will carry your 8-win team to the national championship, how much money do you think they could get passing the hat to make that happen? Because I think that they could get a legitimate $5 million.
Easy. Oh, yeah. No, that would have happened. If you would have known ahead of time, yeah, Cecil doesn't have to negotiate.
Yeah.
He just has to evaluate offers at that point. There's no back and forth. They go get that. There is a list of people. Like, if you go back, by the way, think about the impact crater of Cam Newton on college football, all right? Think about it. Not only does he become a first-round draft pick who becomes a successful quarterback in the NFL, right? Not only does he lead Auburn to a national title game, the list of people who owe Cam Newton money
yes.
is as long as my arm.
Yes.
And it's still going. It's still going. Gus Malzahn doesn't get that gig without Cam Newton. Gene Chizik doesn't get several paychecks and most likely his job as a TV commentator without, or at least at the same scale, without Cam Newton, right? There's a lot of people on that team whose draft prospects were improved by their profile being like raised and heightened by Cam Newton. Like, there is no shortage to the amount of capital that he brought on board and the amount of like money that people owe him. It's astonishing when you think about it.
Yep, and we need it in cartoon form, man. We absolutely need it in cartoon form. We need it. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what? Well, I guess this one ultimately proved to be tragic, but Albert Means, we forget about that. Alabama almost blew it all with over $250,000 for a dude that wasn't even good.
There's that, and I would also do the time that I would also do Phil Fulmer recruiting versus Nick Saban. I'd do that whole blindside thing all over again.
Oh,
I'd
yes.
animate that, because if you remember, Nick Saban in The Blindside, the book, is quoted as walking in and going, oh, I love what you've done with these window treatments.
Yes. Yes.
In an Armani suit, walks in and with smelling like only a whiff of the finest possible cologne, tells the mama, hey, I love what you've done with these window treatments. Meanwhile, Phil Fulmer walks in a pair of ill-fitting khakis, grumpy. It's over at that point. It's over. And then Ed Orgeron walks in and says, let me show you blocking moves, and starts putting down like salt shakers and pepper shakers to do it. It's brilliant. It's all these like little sad, brilliant stories that I think, you know, they need the Tales from the Tour Bus treatment.
And Steve Spurrier belittling Mac Brown at every turn. Right, which I had forgotten about until recently. Just Steve Spurrier at Duke. Like, before Steve Spurrier had Ray Goff, before he had Phil Fulmer, we were these people that he just demeaned every chance he got. He had Mac Brown. And, oh, my goodness. What do you call him, Mr. Football?
Oh, no, Mr. February. Worse. He said Mr. Football a couple times, but he did call him Mr. February, which was the first thing I thought when he was rehired. I thought, well, I know what Duke's got to do now. They got to hire Spurrier.
Oh, bring him back. Bring him back. I mean, but him just, and every, you know, well, Mr. Football down there, I'm sure. I'm like, did Mac Brown ever say a word about you?
Not one. He just got pictures taken on his home field. That's what happened.
Right. But
Duke would beat him by 20 and then take a picture
40,
of the scoreboard with Spurrier smiling.
By 40. Yeah, it was by 40. Did Fulmer ever do anything to Spurrier? Like, was there ever anything that made him just like, have you heard J.A.'s story about Fulmer and Spurrier? Like, somehow I don't know how this isn't like one of those. He said he went down there for, I guess it was the 95 Fiesta Bowl, like the Buccaneers job was open. And they ask Spurrier about, because Spurrier's name had come up. And he's like, nope, don't think we're going to take that job. I don't know what it is about. Sometimes these jobs come open and some people's names just come up. And I guess my name is just one of them that people think about when these jobs come open. And there's a pause and he goes, but let me ask you something. Why is it that Phil Fulmer's name never comes up when any of these jobs come open? Why did you do that?
Just catching a stray.
It's such a stray. Like, nobody's talking about him. They are bathing and indulging in the idea of what a great coach you are, that people want to hire you in the NFL. And you just had to pull that one out right there.
James, this is the other thing. Fulmer really tried at recruiting and was pretty good. I mean, he had some good recruiters. They did well. Spurrier's recruiting, the worst. Like, James Bates has a story. James Bates, ACC commentator and former Florida linebacker, and quite an artist in his own right. If you go to James Bates' site, he does some spectacular pop art around SEC football. But he said this was Spurrier's entire recruiting pitch. Please, I want you to imagine the entire 90s machine of Florida football. Right? High scoring, flashy, insanely swaggy football team. This was the recruiting pitch he gave James Bates, a linebacker from Tennessee. Well, Batesy, most people work their whole lives so they can come down to Florida. You could do it at the age of 18. That was it. He said, hey, do you want to be a retiree at the age of 18? That was the pitch to James Bates. And they asked him, did that appeal to you? He's like, no, that's a terrible recruiting pitch, but I went.
Why would you say that? Like, has there been no one to talk you out of this? Like, this makes me wonder what it had to be like if Steve Spurrier is your assistant, right? Because I don't think he's doing what you told him to do then either.
No. Remember, at one point when he is the offensive coordinator, he's asked by his head coach after a play, hey, what was that play? Because I believe they were supposed to run the clock out. And Spurrier said, oh, that play? I call that one touchdown. I think when you go, man, he was head coach material from the start, I don't think it means what you think it means. I think it means he wasn't working on the staff that well, so you better get him his own gig.
That's what Mike Lee said about Art Briles, before he was a pariah, where they got that job as running backs coach at Texas Tech. Art Briles did not come there to work for Mike Leach, just so you know.
No. No, he did not. And there's numerous that's I think Lou Holtz is the same too. Lou Holtz, when he was defensive coordinator for Woody Hayes, he was asked when O.J. Simpson busted like a 80-yard TD run, Woody Hayes pulled him over and said, hey, what, why did he go 80 yards on us for a TD? And Lou Holtz looked at him and goes, well, because he couldn't go 81.
That's a good point. It's hard to argue against it.
No, I really love, I love the idea, by the way, too, that when you talk about recruiting, we might be overrating recruiting. Like, we really might be. When people go, he just has a special bond with kids. There's so many things that go into this, that like we really kind of, I think recruiting might be one of these things that we really sort of overrate people's, connection and ability to pitch, right? The personal level. I'm not saying overrating the ability to recruit well or make an appealing offer relative to the competition. I'm just saying that kind of mesmerizing one-on-one stuff, when you look at some of the people who've been extremely successful coaches and extremely successful people in college football at the management level, we might be overplaying it a little bit because Spurrier was not a great recruiter.
Well, I also think that we can kind of underrate how cynical teenagers can be if they've been commodities for a long time. Like, don't assume they all believe their coaches are their daddies or believe that they are walking in with all this trust level for the coach. They look for somewhere to play football, man.
Yeah, and oftentimes that's their position coach, right? It's not the head coach. The head coach sometimes just walks in and like they're like, yeah, that guy seemed okay. He seemed cool. He seemed fine. They're not expecting greatness from them. They're not really expecting a personal connection from the head coach. They know that. they know this guy's a CEO, you know? Like, there's an LSU story about Ed Orgeron. This is a pretty recent one. I believe it's from last year. He just walked into a house, you know, that he was recruiting in and goes, I'm going to fix something to eat. He just went and got some, like, so he heated up some gumbo out of the fridge and some rice. And the mom's like, okay, cool. And, you know, the recruit, when telling the story, was kind of like, I guess that's who he is, you know? Like, cool. The person they actually have that bond with, and the person that they're actually, like, getting the most interaction with, well, that's their position coach. By far, that's the person that they really have a face with, and the person that generally they're more angry when they're fired than the head guy, right? Head guy just kind of wanders in and out a lot of the times. You know, most of them can't be that hands-on. You've got so many people to focus on, so many things to do in a day. Their position coach is the one that's, you know, probably got more of that mojo.
It actually makes me think of, as I was thinking again, of different people that we could do the cartoon treatment of, because I would love the cartoon treatment of Tales from Florida Football 2006 through 2009. Like, I feel like that would be amazing. And you know who I want to hear tell all his stories? Tebow. I want to know what all that madness looked like through the lens of Tim Tebow, right? Like, Tim Tebow knows that Percy Harvin beat up the wide receivers coach, right? Like, he knows that. He knows Aaron Hernandez is insane. He knows all of these things, and he's there for 4 years. Like, how much do you think he told his dad about what was going on?
I think it was a lot of nodding, right? His roommate, Tony Joyner, stole his own car back from a towing place in Gainesville.
Wow, that's gangster.
Yeah, his roommate. Especially too. I would not convict anyone if I were in that jury, because I lived in Gainesville for 4 years. I know those towing companies. If you said, well, he stole his car back from him, I'm like, that's not a crime.
Oh yeah, and tow truck drivers, yeah, the heat, everybody in there is strapped. Nobody is like watching over a bunch of cars and just crossing their fingers.
No. This is actually, I knew one or two guys at Florida who decided, you know what? I'm not getting my car towed today. You're not taking my car, buddy. I'm gonna do it myself. You're just gonna have to, yeah. And you know what they found out? They found out that it's like that trench coat, the Matrix, right? Like, you just open it up, and it's just an armory in there. Like, they are strapped on a level that even on a Florida level of strapped is awe-inspiring. Also, a couple of those guys don't even bother with the heat. They'll give you hands. They'll hand them to you. And you don't want that, because they spend all day basically putting cars on hooks. They're stronger than you. They're meaner than you. And they're more motivated than you, because they already don't like you.
Or the old man's favorite threatening tool, the tire tool.
You know, just not like when you go 19-year-old undergraduate at the University of Florida, or 48-year-old tow truck driver who's got all the grudges the world can possibly hand a human. I know where my money's going.
Yeah, and again, the tire iron. Because the tire iron really is, like, bang for your buck, the tire iron is kind of like nunchucks in that sense. Except you can whoop nunchucks through the strike zone a little bit faster. But the tire iron, that's a lot of damage that you can do with a fairly quick rotation.
Also, if you're willing to fight with a piece of machinery, I'm out. If you're just willing to grab, like, a hunk of metal, right? No, I don't want any part of you. Because if you pull nunchucks, I'm like, I don't know, maybe you got those at the mall. If you pull a tire iron, you've been waiting for me.
Yeah, no. Anybody shows up with a tire iron, you don't want the problems, man. I was actually thinking about something else that'll be a future cartoon mock-up. You're talking about position coaches. Dude, Cliff Kingsbury is going to Los Angeles.
I'm so excited for this. So excited.
Like, he's got to quit and start doing movies, right? Like, this is the end of his coaching career.
It's the end of a coaching career. I don't know, like, after it's the end of a particular coaching career. I also want to know this, right? Did Clay Helton know that he's just moving the new husband in?
Yeah.
Right? He just, honey, you just do whatever you have to do to be happy in this marriage. We'll work on it. Okay, cool. I'm going to move in Cliff Kingsbury. Oh, okay. Cool. So he's going to be in the guest house? No. I was thinking you could sleep out there, and I'll be in here with him, and you'll be out in the pool house. Oh, okay. Cool. That's fine.
Well, like, think about this. You're Clay Helton. You're an offensive guy. Not only did they just bring in an offensive coordinator, but someone who doesn't even do what you do. Right? Like he does not do offense the way you do offense. This is a paradigm shift for the whole thing. And oh, by the way, maybe the most charming man in your sport.
Uh-huh. And someone who you think is going to bond with that young 18, 19-year-old JT Daniels better? Who do you think's going to speak their language a little more accurately and with greater receptivity? Who do you think is going to walk right in with the sunglasses on and look like he was never anywhere else? That's the thing. Because, I don't know, you're Clay Helton, and it's no offense to Clay Helton. You're just like, I don't know, that's a dude from North Mississippi. That's pretty much what I expect, man, you know? Also, is it ever a good idea when they go, hey, we're not going to fire you, but we're hiring all new staff?
Yes.
Nope. That would be like, hey, we're going to keep your head. We're just going to give you this brand new sexy body to go with your old standard head. Pretty soon the body's going to think, you know what? I bet we can get a better head. Maybe one that's wearing sunglasses, real handsome, like Cliff Kingsbury.
Right, they brought it to, you know, so I did Highly Questioned before a few years. We used to do interviews, and the way the interviews worked was Dan was always the primary person doing the interviews. He was so good at it, and I was just there for like, wait a minute, like if I hear something that was worth like pulling on to, asking a second question, or, you know, like when we had black people on, asking stuff that Dan don't know that, you know, he ain't black. You know, that would always be the game. So a lot of times you see me on television with it and my eyes look like I was just a little bored or whatever. It's just, you know, like I wasn't not engaged, but you know, I'm riding shotgun on this. That's cool, but that's what I'm doing. Dude, we were on there with Kingsbury. Nah, man, like, I'm like, why are you so cool? Like, I don't understand this. Like, why am I paying such close attention right now?
No, and the other thing too is you say, well, it's a paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift. But it's one the NFL wants, too. Remember, the rumors leading up to this were not only that Kingsbury was entertaining offers from USC and a number of other schools, but also that the NFL was extremely interested. For instance, when Mike McCarthy was fired at the Packers, there was this little frisson of people getting super excited about the notion of Aaron Rodgers and Cliff Kingsbury working together. So when USC says, is he really a fit, right? Well, USC always prides itself on being NFL ready, on always having the signal caller ready to go. And now they hired somebody who the NFL was looking at for ideas and information. So it's a fit in more than one way here. And it's a fit that Clay Helton really doesn't offer at the same level, does he? How slick is this move and how are they going to manage it? That's what I'm going to watch over the next year if they're super successful. There's also one little thing here, too. How does that defense cope with the increased stress that offense is going to put on them? Because I bet that staff, they're going to have some issues with that, too.
Yeah, I contend Clay Helton just needs to be dropping off like audition notices for Cliff Kingsbury. He needs to be introducing him to anybody he knows as CAA. You know, anywhere around there, he need to be sending different kind of scouts over there. Because I'm telling you, there's no way in the world Cliff Kingsbury going to be in L.A. but for so long and not wind up in movies. There's no way.
Cliff, if you thought about starting a YouTube channel, it's a great way to really sort of bond with your audience.
Dude,
and, you know, get numbers.
He's going from he went from College Station to Lubbock. Like, that's where he's been for the last 6 or 7 years, is between those booming metropolises, right? You're in L.A. now? And, like, they don't even know, like, wait, the L.A. Times is going to have something on who's this new guy in L.A., because they don't know nothing about him.
Oh, let's see. He's good-looking, and he's going to be semi-famous there. He can get away with murder. Anything.
Yeah, man. Like, thinking he's going to take the USC head coaching job. Nah, that's setting his sights short on what the potential is on this.
Oh, and we get him in the same city with the entire apparatus of the entertainment industry. No, we got a Netflix show. That Netflix show is happening in 2 weeks, right? And it's set on USC, and they're going to edit the whole thing, and Clay Helton won't be in it, right? It'll be like a Trojan Warriors, a season with the USC football team. It'll be this whole thing about Kingsbury, and Clay Helton will be in it three times.
Well,
for about 20 seconds.
Well, let me tell you something else I'd love to see mocked up into some cartoon form. Cliff Kingsbury as NFL backup quarterback, right? So, like, just imagine this. Like, if you are a woman and you at a bar and you just post it up and you see Cliff Kingsbury over there, and then Cliff Kingsbury comes and starts hollering at you, and you with it, you see what's going on, you know, all that, okay, cool, and then you ask him, so what do you do? Actually, I play quarterback for the Broncos. What? Right? Like, what are you talking about? I thought Brian Griese was the quarterback. I mean, he's a quarterback. I'm a quarterback, too. Nah, look it up.
Yeah.
Look it up. Right. What? And so you making decent money, you know, however long he managed to stay on these teams, mind you. But you making decent money. And unlike the actual quarterback, you got all the time in the world. Like, you would never go get to a place where Cliff Kingsbury was getting into a game.
And on top of that, he's not damaged goods.
No.
Right? Not a starter. You go, I don't know. If I'm looking at hanging out with Cliff, he's not going to be banged up. He's going to be game for stuff. This is going to be great.
Right.
Also, man, he's bigger than you think he is. Like, I don't know. Like, have you met him in person?
I have not met him in person.
Dude, he's built like he's way bigger than I thought he was going to be. You know, you get like, this is always the thing with athletes. People don't really know. They don't really understand scale, right? For instance, The Rock looks huge. Okay, Dwayne Johnson is huge. But if there's a picture of him next to Barkley,
yes,
and him next to Shaq, right? You got the photo I'm thinking about?
Yes.
Okay. So you look at him and go, man, Charles Barkley must be huge. I swear, if you stand next to Charles Barkley, he's so – I don't know what it is about him. He's big.
He's
don't
huge.
Get me wrong. Like, he's got a head the size of a water main. But it's not an intimidating kind of big. Like, Charles is just kind of round. And he's not as – you just go, oh, that's a big guy. You don't think, oh, man, that is a big dude, right? Kingsbury's built like – it's like he's literally – he's like a cliff. He's just tall. He's like tall and real broad and has this kind of presence when he walks in the room that I imagine does a lot of the recruiting for him, you know? Like walks in, you go, all right, that's the guy in charge. Cool.
I remember this too. Like, you know, we used to get all the coaches to come through and do interviews in HQ because we could just bank them. And so one year they all came through and they were all wearing, as I recall, like polos from the whole school. Like that's how they decided they were going to do it. I don't remember what the other cats did the next year, but Cliff Kingsbury, that suit wasn't a tuxedo, but I remember him being very much so much better dressed than the rest of the Big 12 coaches when it came time to interview us. He was like, nah. I'm gonna do this.
So he's one of those people you go, oh, that's who clothes are designed for.
Yeah. like he, you know, he did it like I did when GQ said they wanted to do that photo shoot with me. They were like, yeah, because they remember that thing that happened with the t-shirt. And so they're like, yeah, you got a lot of cool t-shirts. We'd like to see you in those t-shirts. I'm like, what are you, crazy? You might be in GQ wearing no t-shirts.
No. I've seen the people who wear t-shirts in GQ. I'm not competing with that.
Yeah, and you guys aren't calling me back to do another one. Like, this is the one chance I got. Kingsbury was like, dude, why would I go on TV in a polo shirt? Look at this. Look at this.
on the list of people who, you know, who could do like a spot shirtless, he's up there, which is one of the things that, like, you know, he doesn't like that. He doesn't want that to be the reputation, right? He wants people to think, oh man, that's a hell of a coach. That's the guy you want to hire, right? I imagine that's kind of an impediment in a lot of ways until I absolutely have to close a recruiting deal.
Oh, yep. Yeah. 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 He don't mind it then.
Yeah. No. Like TV media, if you're doing a piece on him, that's always going to be a concern, right? And now, by the way, in case you didn't think that was a problem before, Hollywood Kingsbury, that's not going away. You just need to lean into that. It's not going anywhere.
Well, the only thing about the deal close is single mama. Yeah, you probably coming in there doing work. But what's it like when pops is sitting right next to moms and moms is staring in your eye and he elbowing her in the ribs like, hey, we got company. Like, how's that go after he walks out the door? Pops like, something about that dude I just don't like. I don't know what it is.
Or this. You just go, yeah, I got to give it to him. I mean, he's that's a much prettier man than me. you're stuck with me, honey.
Yeah, there aren't that many of those, however, right? And like that poor lady, Cliff Kingsbury's coming here and showing up, and now you looking back over here as your husband takes off his good shirt in that V-neck dingy white undershirt that he's been wearing all day long.
No, man, if Kingsbury's coming over to my house to recruit my son and we both got to be there, I'm showing up in a bathrobe. Whatever. I'm doing the opposite of competition because it's not a competition, right? That's like if somebody said, you have to play a professional hockey game tomorrow. You know what I'm doing? I'm going out in the ice in, like, sneakers. I'm going out in the ice in sneakers and shorts. You know why? I'm not playing. It's not happening because I won't compete for a second. So, yeah, it's me in the bathrobe talking with Cliff. We're going to get along great.
All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk some college football with Spencer Hall. But first, guys, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, like me. That is a big problem. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. Trust me. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair that you've lost. Now, how are you going to feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? Why sit back and watch your hairline do the moonwalk when you can get some medicine, get some science? And here's the solution for Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. They got well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions that'll help you keep your hair. It's not those pills that you get at the gas station. It's prescription solutions that are backed by science. Yeah, you don't have to deal with a waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. You save hours going to forhims.com. But just answer a few quick questions and a doctor will review and can prescribe you, and the product is shipped directly to your door. So order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See website for full details. This will cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's forhims.com/Bomani. forhims.com/Bomani. By the way, we've like tangentially talked about college football, even though it feels like there's like actual college football stuff that has happened. I'm mad at Ohio State. I don't know if you heard me say this, but they're going to change their coach but not give us a coach in search, which is really no fun.
Absolutely no fun whatsoever. You know, in fact, the only thing you can do off that is, you know, speculate badly about the incoming coach, right? That stinks. Like, that's bad for Ohio State when you don't have a search, because now we can just focus on the guy who's going to be in charge and just think of all of the things that you didn't consider, right? We don't even have time to consider all the positives about Ryan Day before we jump to the negative, because you didn't even give us a comparison, right? That's what you're talking about. You want, you know, you run a coaching search, and I think you should always run a coaching search, even if you hire internally, because you don't want, it's a bad precedent because it locks you in future searches with the same administration.
The only thing I say about that, though, is I feel like when teams make that decision to do that, they really feel like they got a guy, right? Like when Oklahoma did that with Lincoln Riley, for example, they really feel like they have a guy there. Like that's the only way that I think that happens, is if they really 100% truly believe that they got the guy right there.
It's got to be somebody so talented that it's grotesque, right? It's got to stick out. It's got to be so obvious that this is the person who's floating most of the boat that you hired them. Riley was definitely that case. I don't know if that's the case with Ryan Day. I don't. I know that everyone really likes him. I know that he did a good job managing them when, you know, Meyer was out. But, you know, I don't know if that fixes a lot of their problems. What's going to fix their problems, and they don't have many. Let's be clear. When you, like, Ryan Day most likely, and I wrote this earlier this week, but Ryan Day will most likely be at best a mild disappointment. And I only say that because Urban Meyer is one of, there is a two on his name. And that is, you know, the one is Nick Saban. The two is Urban Meyer. And it's not far off, man. It is really not far off, because you're talking about one of the most talented and committed coaches of his time. I don't think anybody would dispute that. You know, Ryan Day, if Ryan Day does what Urban Meyer does, he will be one of the best coaches of his generation. That's why I'm not betting on it. Ryan Day might be a very good coach, right? He might even be like a, you know, good to sometimes great coach. But I know the guy that he's replacing is a great coach. And I know that's a horrible spot to be in most of the time. Yeah, even if you're at Ohio State, because what if he loses two games next year?
Right.
That's a disappointment, right? We have complaints about that. You know why I know that? Because Ohio State has complaints right now, and they lost one game this year.
And this, but the standard has changed, right? Because I feel like all the coaches prior to Meyer, right? So we're really talking, you know, Tressel and before, they were really playing a regional game. And winning the Big Ten was a satisfactory result. Dude, they don't even recruit Ohio anymore because they just made the call that we can't get – playing this regional game is not what we want to do. Like, the scope of what that job is has actually changed. As much as you could talk about tradition and everything else, prior to 2014, Ohio State had won one national championship since the South integrated college football. Like, they were just winning the Midwest. I don't think they're satisfied with that anymore.
No, and they – and. There's all kinds of disadvantages to that. For instance, when you stop doing that, you know, what happens when we come back and go, oh, well, you lost two games and you missed on an Ohio recruit. And suddenly those things which were acceptable look so much larger than they used to look, right? Also, are you going to have the kind of authority, right? If the standard has changed like this, are you going to have the kind of authority to go, well, you know, we lost one game, but I'm going to fire the defensive coordinator, which is insane. Like, if you lose, like, by any objective measure, if you lose one game and you say, well, we need to make some staff changes. What? Can I just, from a perspective of somebody who watches Florida football, who went 9-3 this year, and I'm like, whoop, take it. Take it. Just three losses? Only three? Awesome. I will take that, especially in year one. If that had been, if you came to me and said, you know, you lose one game, you think you're going to end up firing an assistant. No, I don't think that's insane. But that's where Ohio State standard is right now, that we look at Greg Schiano, and most Ohio State fans, they'd sell that tomorrow.
They need to fire
sell
him,
it
though.
Right. I mean, I don't disagree, right? But think about, this is like saying you don't like the cup holders on your McLaren, right? This is like saying, you know, the seat cover on the Ferrari, it's a little itchy. I think I'm going to get rid of it. That's where we're at with Ohio State. I don't disagree that that's the standard they're at. I'm just saying the guy that put them there just left. And anyone who's going to be able to hold that is going to be a coach who has to be as good and as exemplary as Urban Meyer. And that, man, that is not – and I will say again, as somebody who watched Florida football and the replacements that followed – that's not something I'm willing to bet you can just pick up on the street.
Yeah, by the way, are we going to find out after Herb leaves Ohio State that he's leaving behind something like what he left behind at Florida? Because part of the thing for the successors is not all Herb's fault, but some of it, yeah.
You know, I would treat this like fallout. You go, I don't know. Should we assume we're safe yet? Why don't you wait another year? Why don't you wait another year before you think about that? Why don't you see what's actually in there? Why don't you take a look? It's there's a half-life to this, and I don't know what it is. Because you don't know. Like, people assume, they go, oh, man, that program's in good shape. You don't know anything, right? Most likely. There's very few people who know what is happening in terms of the internal dynamics of a program. And mind you, those are all real volatile, too, right? You know what is keeping Alabama football together and working like it is. Nick Saban, that's a great machine. But make no mistake, the central organizing principle of Alabama football is Nick Saban. It's not the boosters. If it was the boosters at this point, who are certainly important to all this, then Mike Shula would have won championships, right? Then Dennis Franchione would have won championships.
Oh, that
but
guy.
That's not what's happening, right? This is why you pay coaches, right? I'm not saying that coaches are paid an appropriate or even just amount of money, especially, you know, relative to the unpaid labor that supports them. However, this is why they get those price tags, because sometimes when they leave, the thing that happens is a complete collapse of the program's overall operating dynamic, right? They're the ones who set the tone. They're the ones who set the key. And once they're gone, especially, and I mean, if you don't teach any kind of processes, this is kind of why I think Alabama will be okay for a while, because one, they've got more talent than God. Two, they have a system now that's in place for how they do things that they'll at least be able to imitate pretty well, right? Like, look at what Les Miles was able to do with everything that was set up pretty well at LSU and that he maintained pretty well. You'll be successful. I don't know if that's the case with Meyer, because did you see his comments about what was happening this season?
No.
That he had overcommitted.
Whoa.
That he said he had a certain style that he had been committed to as a coach for, 25 years at this point, and that when things didn't start to work out, he didn't delegate. That's exactly what happened at Florida, and that's what happens with some CEO type coach. Somebody who is more hands-on is, when they leave, it damages that program more because you take away more. When Urban Meyer really starts putting his hands on game planning and starts really spending super long nights getting involved in all the minutiae of how things actually happen, that's when their departures hurt the program more. It's just a bigger hole.
Yeah, it's going to be one there. And now my buddy Chris Carter at FS1 says that Harbaugh might be looking to get out of Michigan, but who's looking to take him? Like, I think he's getting a bad rap for what's going on at Michigan, but he does seem to be turning into an antiquity.
Yeah, well, certainly relative to what they were doing at Ohio State, which is real weird because Meyer was talking about how he didn't feel like he was keeping up with certain elements of the game, and I was like, well, man, what's Harbaugh doing? Because what they did, like, that was a styles make fight kind of thing. Michigan could probably beat, 98% of the teams in this country in 21-7 games, right? Because that's how they were operating. They got up against somebody like Ohio State, and it was going to get ugly. If he's an antiquity there, I think that'd be sad because, they're always so close to getting it, right? Like, if they just had this quarterback or if they just had a wide receiver to complement them, like, they're always just missing a piece, which is fascinating to me. Like, they're so close to doing this. If you look at them statistically, like their S&P, Bill Connolly's measure of how efficient a team is, they've consistently been a top 10 team under Harbaugh. It's not even close. It's just they lose these games against teams that do certain things. And it was really weird to watch that versus Ohio State, because remember the end of the Lloyd Carr era at Michigan where people said, oh man, they can't play spread teams. They can't handle spread teams. And I'm sitting here watching a Michigan team who uses some spread stuff, by the way. Like, it wasn't, Lloyd Carr man ball, I formation, run it 50 times a game. But I'm watching an Ohio State team that's using the spread, completely dismantling a Michigan team. And I was like, well, how much has changed, buddy?
Yeah.
How is any of this any different than Michigan's problems, 11 years ago at this point?
Yeah, like, I think they were like, hey, we got to go to the future, right? And then they got there and were like, ooh, I don't like the future very much. And so they rolled back just a little bit. And Harbaugh, I guess, seemed like the perfect middle ground on that. And dude, if Jim Harbaugh could turn Stanford into a team that just knocks your nose off every week, I would love to see if he could pull that off in Michigan. Yeah, well, nah, not quite the same, but also think those teams have been better. Like that year that they lost three games by a combined 5 points or something like that. Last year was a year you expected to be slow. This year's team, actually pretty good. They just hurt that one. Yeah. They lose, though. Ooh, man, this doesn't feel good.
No. And again, this is all like, this is a disease of luxury, right? Like teams that get real good and they get the standard raised, they get gout, right? They get irritated. And when I say gout, I mean that the inflamed toe that hurts in gout is the fan going, yeah, what about that one we lost? What about those two we lost, right? Like, look at who Michigan lost to this year. They lost to the eventual conference champion, and they lost to an undefeated playoff team.
Right.
Like, what? Any other year, man, what am I supposed to do with that?
But as a Texas fan, I've seen a season like that. One loss that's fairly defensible and a huge loss to the rival, and it'll almost get your coach fired.
Yeah, and it'll ruin, like, it doesn't take much stink to fill up a room, right? All you need are one or two obvious bad moments in a season, and it'll completely ruin the rest. And that's like, the Notre Dame loss seems way more pardonable to me. It seems way more understandable than an abject defeat at the hands of a rival where you allow more points than the program's allowed since what, World War II. Like, that's an insane loss to take, and it's not one that I think Michigan can tolerate long term. The question is, what's the endemic problem there that's keeping them from doing what they want to do?
Let's be
real. That's what they need to figure out, because it's not just been a Harbaugh thing at this point.
Well, let's be real. That loss at Alabama would get you fired.
Yeah. Oh,
like the amazing thing about Saban that doesn't get lost in this, that gets lost in this, is please understand, Saban has no cachet of goodwill. If they go 9-3, they better not go 9-3 again. Saban will be out of there. He has avoided
Those three. Yeah. Show me those three, man.
Yeah.
Because those three will really matter. Are they just weird? I don't know. Maybe Mississippi State finally learned a lesson and paid for a Cam Newton level talent and you beat us. Okay, cool. Maybe that's crazy. Did we lose a quarterback for one game or two quarterbacks? Did we lose three quarterbacks in a game? I don't know. You might line up a 9-3 that was just merely horrible. But if one of those three is Auburn and they beat us by 40, then yeah, put your for sale sign up. Okay. Call your agent. Because it's happening. You might want to go ahead, take the shutters on your house, close them up. Because you know what? A brick can't go through those. They can go through glass and have. Remember, when we talk about which teams have actually had a coach get a brick thrown through his window because he lost the wrong game, it's Alabama. And it wasn't in a year they had a losing record, man.
Bill Curry, this last year at Alabama, I think their two losses were to Auburn and Miami in the Sugar Bowl, and they hit him with a "you're not getting a raise" and effectively fired him. They won the SEC.
And mind you, too, can I just a little more context? Bill Curry is the nicest man alive. It's not, he wasn't walking in there like the devil in coaching shorts, right? He wasn't despised. Bill Curry is just like a lamb of a man. He's so pleasant and nice. And Bama was like, "You lost Auburn, brick."
Saban has managed to allow us to forget how actually insane they are because nothing has happened to inflame them. He had the 1-3 loss season. They won a national championship next year, and good for him. Because if he had gone from 3-2, I don't know, it would have been tight around there for the next one.
Yeah, no. Just I always go back to Apocalypse Now. Alabama, you know, it, like Nick Saban's their Colonel Kurtz. All right? Don't walk in and think that it's a nice, orderly village. All right? Don't walk in and think that it's nice at all. Okay? That man's just in charge. And as long as everything's working, you let that crazy man do whatever he wants. But the minute it doesn't, you need to take the first taxi out of town. Fast. Don't look back. You don't want to know what's going to happen.
I think we could close with this because this is actually a fascinating question. They won't have a hard time getting somebody to take that job after Saban, but can you think of any worse job to take than Alabama after Saban?
Oh, no. You just take that. You take that no, and you're like, hey, this is what my contract structure is going to look like. You ready? Okay. You pay me $3 million a year. Well, that's probably under market value for the Alabama. I don't. $3 million a year. Okay, cool. You want any incentives with that? Nope. Okay. Do you want any perks or anything? Yeah, no, just this is standard stuff. All right. Okay. What about the buyout? I would like a $20 million ironclad unmovable buyout. That's what you're doing. You're just setting up your retirement package, right? don't even touch your buyout money. That's all, right? Basically, you're saying, I just want the shoot, right? Are you sure you want to get on this plane? Yeah, man, it's fine. But do I have a shoot? You need to make sure I have two parachutes, both nice, top of the line, and all good, because guess what? You're getting fired. There's no way that the person who comes in after Nick Saban isn't getting fired after 5 years. Mm-mm. It's just not happening.
Well, you're not getting any credit for what winning you do the first 2 years, right? Like you're not going to get any of that. None of that is going to work for you. And then, whoo, man, by the time you people left, they got two kinds of coaches at Alabama. This is really it. The ones that win national championships and the ones that get fired.
I'd go in and I would just say, hey, listen, we're all going to get a great job after this. Okay. I'd get a young staff. Do you want guys talented, loyal, people who eventually are going to give you a job when you're on the downslope, right? When you're coming down, basically what I'm telling you is this job is not your end job. It is the job that's going to get you your next three jobs. hire a great young staff, get them all experience that they didn't have before, know full well that you're going to get fired and get buyouts just all on the back end. That's everything you want to do with this job. Also, make sure that you don't invest in any serious long-term real estate projects in Tuscaloosa. Don't. Were you thinking about in year three building a house? Hold off on that, Chief. You just wait. Okay? Because guess what? You're effectively renting, okay?
There's no way it could go well. There's not.
No, it's just you have to know that, right? Like, you just have to go, I'm going to have as comfortable and as, like, just go in, just be like somebody who's been given a terminal diagnosis, right? Like, hey, man, you know what the next coach at Alabama is? That's your bucket list coach, right? It like, year three would be so great for them. When you know you're going to get fired, oh, I'm calling every trick play I ever wanted to call. I'm going to try every insane thing I ever wanted to try. They already hate me. They hated me a year ago, right? And they just couldn't figure out how to fire me because I ended up winning the SEC. And I don't know, maybe Ole Miss, right? I lost two games. I'm already going to get canned. So guess what? Year three, fiesta, man. We're running. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to run the run and shoot. We're going to run a 3-3-5. And call the grits blitz. I'm just going to, like, run Jolie Dunn's old offense, right? I'm going to bring both safeties and a dude off the bench, and you're gonna know what I'm doing. You're going to kind of respect it because you're going to be like, hey, man, that's exactly what I would do if somebody told me I only had a year to live. Well done.
Look, man, people talk about maybe one day Dabo will take that job. If he does, then he's dumber than he looks. There's no way he could be that stupid.
Again, if Dabo takes that job, I know Dabo's thinking about retirement.
Right, you know, that's it.
You know, I got a nice lake house, but I could have a nicer one.
I also wouldn't want that job after Dabo because he's got us full. Like, that's still Clemson. This is actually one of the more miraculous things that anybody has ever pulled off.
Oh, in terms of value, like, you know, value over replacement coach, right? Dabo's is higher than Nick Saban's. Seen Alabama do what they to some extent before. I've seen them be really consistently good for long periods of time under different coaches. You've seen that at Clemson? No. Dabo should be paid more than Nick Saban because for the particular peg and hole, there is no better fit.
I still can't believe it. Like, all of us who were crazy skeptics. Like, it's hard to explain to people, like, the old the freezing cold takes guy will dig up my stuff on Dabo from back in the day from time to time, and I'm like, I got no shame about this. Go back and watch what I was talking about at that moment.
No, what you were talking about was an absolute, like, certainty that this person was never going to get them over the hump. Can I take you back to a specific date on which everybody was convinced that Dabo was just another Tommy Bowden?
Would that be January 1st, 2013?
It'd be January 5th, 2012. You're close. The Orange Bowl.
The Orange Bowl, yes.
But West Virginia Clemson, when West Virginia, under Dana Holgorsen, decided to put up 70 points on Clemson, including a second quarter where they hung 35 on him. That at that date, if I told you, Dabo Swinney is still going to be the coach, and he is going to have a national championship and multiple ACC titles. I would have been able to take all the bets. I would be a much wealthier man if I could have done that day.
I couldn't, like, that game was crazy, man. Like, I just legitimately, I mean, everything that has happened subsequently. I remember Dabo did this thing where somebody said something about Clemson, and he was like, look at all the things we've done. We are past that. And it was one of the rare times that somebody says something like that. And I went back and was like, you know what, dude? You're 100% correct. And that means that you are a superhero.
Oh, remember, too, Taj Boyd. Taj Boyd goes out and Taj Boyd lays an egg against Florida State. And they suffer a beatdown at home. And it was like, oh, well, Dabo's never going to get over the hump, man. Never happening. 2 years later, national title.
It's wow. And on that note, that is my man, Spencer Hall. Check him out, SBNation.com, EDSBS.com. Also, check out Tales from the Tour Bus. It's just worth checking out, as you can see, as we had a whole lot of fun with that one. I appreciate your time, sir.
Oh, hey, No, anytime, man.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. You do this thing here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassain handled everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Again, thanks to Spencer Hall. Thanks to our sponsor, Hims. Also, remember, rate us, review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you're a hater. Also, subscribe. I'd appreciate it. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.